Hey everybody, this is Corey Nakasue and welcome to the Cosmic Dispatch. It's been a minute and there have been some changes. The last time I did a recording, I believe was October during the October eclipses, and we all know what went down in October. And then prior to that, I was on the air live. I did a live weekly radio show on Radio Kingston that I just couldn't keep up anymore. Like doing a 1 hour like planning and making notes and doing research every single week to do a live 1 hour show. And they liked having me there live, every week. That started to become like not sustainable. And so I loved doing it and I would like to continue to do it, and I'm still figuring out how I can fit it in and what I have capacity for, but I definitely want to keep it up because it was such a It was such a boon to my practice. I met so many people, and it really forced me to think more deeply and track more religiously the transits as they were happening. So I am going to keep it up. I don't really have a plan yet for the actual time structure. But I really felt like I wanted to say something about the big astrology coming up on January 20th and the stunning astrology that is going to take place during Aquarius season. So, for those of you that are new to this podcast, I'm a Western tropical modern astrologer who's also studied a lot of Hellenistic astrology and a little bit of evolutionary astrology. And I kind of do this multidisciplinary practice of counseling. I write about astrology. You can read my horoscopes in Chronogram magazine every month. And I also have a somatic therapy practice. I'm a theater artist and a writer. So, true to my Mars and Gemini, I juggle many things, don't want to give anything up. And I'm in the constant process of trying to figure out how to do all these things while also really believing that I'm actually doing one thing and I'm doing it in a lot of different ways. And if you're interested in any of the things that I do, you can visit my websites at astrologybycorey.com and coreynakasue.com. And all of that information will be in the show notes. And if you do like listening, watching this content, please like and subscribe as we go through this bit of a transition. This also enables me to have deeper conversations because I'm not restricted to like 54 minutes, and I can say shit. And that was really hard for me not to say on live radio. And also I can really just say whatever the fuck I want, which I really couldn't do before. I loved working at Radio Kingston, but that's just, that's live radio and FCC restrictions and the culture of organizations, which the those rules and regulations exist, and they're not always conducive to the most creative or spontaneously expressive content. So I'm really happy to be here, but still figuring it out. And let's see, I think that's about it for now. So as I was saying, in today's show, we're going to talk about Aquarius season, and I brought my friend Anastasia Wasko with me to discuss all of these Aquarius topics, the transits, and also talk about her work, which I think is of a very Aquarian nature. I'm gonna read your bio, Anastasia, and I know I'm going to mispronounce some of these things. So forgive me, but Anastasia Wasko is a writer, editor, and transpersonal guide from the New York, New Jersey area, and currently living in northeastern Alabama. Her BA is in transpersonal psychology from Sophia University, and she is currently exploring psychosynthesis in the master's program at the Institute of Psychosynthesis in London, England. Anastasia's fiction and creative nonfiction writing have appeared in Space Cowboys Simultaneous Times podcast, Thrive Global, and in Journal of Exceptional Experiences. Her debut work of autofiction, 713, was self-published in 2003. Her subsequent autofiction works, Metawork, Her subsequent autofiction works, Metawork, was released in 2021. And Keys Cooker?
Yeah.
Okay, good. In 2024, Anastasia has spent several years working on Mindfield, the official publication of the Parapsychological Association. She wrote about parapsychology and psychosynthesis for Paranormal Ruptures, Critical Approaches to Exceptional Experiences, and released by Beyond the Fray Publishing in 2023. She focuses on helping individuals explore their relationship with the world beyond the ego so they can be more present, joy-filled, and fulfilled in their human experience. She is an energy worker, flowing centaur energy, and has consulted charts in the evolutionary astrology style for years. Anastasia has studied Ayurveda and yoga culture with Dr. Vasant Lad and other teachers across the globe. Welcome, Anastasia. I hope I didn't butcher too many of those names.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you did great.
Okay. I'm going to bring you in a couple minutes. But first, since we're going to talk about Aquarius season, I just wanted to share a brief overview, and then we'll dig in. And actually, I'm borrowing from my own rough draft that is due in a couple days. For chronogram, I'm not supposed to do that, but it might change anyway. And here it is. February is the heart of winter in the Northern Hemisphere, host to the cool and steely sign of Aquarius and the ice melting sign of Pisces. Much like last month's six planet pile up in Capricorn, this month, and I'm meaning February, we're inundated with six Aquarian planets, and this is a trend for the next few months. When we live through planetary clusters like these, the experience is cohesive and focused, if lacking some perspective. And in Aquarius, we need our space and the freedom to go our own way, think our own thoughts. And some of these ways and thoughts might be revolutionary. Though the mood can be a bit chilly and distanced during these times, it's not due to a lack of care. The progress and well-being of humanity as a whole is of great concern for Aquarius, as long as things don't get too personal. Aquarius needs that bird's eye view. And I'm thinking I'm going to be talking with Anastasia. Aquarius might even need that alien eye view, like really pulling out there, seeing the whole picture. Aquarius is also host to new tenant Pluto, who will spend the next 20 years delving into the shadows of social organizations and movements, technological advancements, and basically showing us the price of progress. Whatever Pluto touches gets a thorough interrogation and cavity search. And that is in order to ferret out all the secrets, all the rot. We saw what Pluto did in Capricorn, as far as that's concerned. And during February, we have Mercury, Mars, and Venus all taking turns conjoining Pluto in what looks like a series of private confessions and maybe even like getting the first like bits of information and mandates, like these little emissaries, these inner planets that Pluto is saying, all right, this is what we're gonna do. This is what we're gonna embark on. So very important. And just as things start feeling maybe too intense, the sun will move into Pisces on February 18th to maybe soften some of these sharp edges of Aquarian logic and offer some hydration to thirsty hearts. And so that's like a very, very brief overview about all the stuff that goes on during Aquarius season and in February. But the most stunning thing is the very, very beginning of Aquarius season. And so on the 20th, January 20th, what happens is the kickoff to Aquarius season actually happens at the very, very end of Capricorn. The Sun and Pluto make a conjunction on January 20th at 29 degrees and 59 minutes of Capricorn. That's like the razor's edge of Capricorn. Sun and Pluto meet, and then on that same day, the Sun moves into Aquarius, hits zero Aquarius, and then a few hours later, Pluto enters. And when Pluto enters, it's pretty much there for another 20 years. It has like a 2 to 3 month break in the fall. It retrogrades back into Capricorn just for like a hot second. And then when it goes back in, it's really, really in for 20 years. This is a new era. And so January, end of January into February is very, very significant. And so Anastasia and I had a conversation, I think it was last week, which is why I asked you on, and we just started like talking about all of the possibilities for Pluto's time in Aquarius. And I don't know if you already feel, Anastasia, like you have some things that you might want to put out there.
Have all the things that I want. Sure. Yeah, thank you. We all went through the Pluto in Capricorn experience, and I jokingly called it like the era of the Hunger Games, of when, the structures were crumbling and we were so upfront and personal with wealth and power inequity. But I feel like Pluto in Aquarius is kind of like the expanse. And you'll notice that I make a lot of sci-fi references just to kind of bring down these like really high level ideas. And so media, right? So The Expanse is this sci-fi series based on a book, Leviathan Wakes, and it's about this not just what goes on planet Earth, but what goes on across the solar system at the threat of this alien weapon being. So then we start to see we're not just looking at short term what's right in front of us. How do we, get through our own individual power struggles? It's about we're in a much, much bigger power struggle. And if you zoom out, for that alien perspective, or that very high level perspective, it's about where in the larger ecosystem are we, and how can we actually go beyond these individual power stories? Because for me, power is starts very much as like the inner planet, inner child work, and then to go beyond the power stories to become a little bit more fulfilled and have what you need means then you can ascend to those higher, more transpersonal values and states of being, where you then can say, okay, it's not just about me, but where in the larger picture. So where are we now in this Pluto in Aquarius time of looking at the planet on a global scale, right? And Arundhati Roy, who is an Indian writer, subcontinent India, she wrote or she spoke about needing new stories. And so this is where I really feel the Pluto in Aquarius situation happening, because if we're continually fighting between countries over resources, everything related, to planet Earth and these old stories based on religious texts, based on like history, right? We're losing the big picture where we need to work more together as a human race and get over these like, I need to win so I can win my story that's been in place. We need completely new stories to step into. And that also means being the asshole in the room. If 9 out of 10 people in your group or your community are like, no, we're doing this. This is what our Bible says. This is what our decrees say. This is what we need to fuss and fight about. You need to be the one person saying, like, nah, we need to think bigger picture end game here. Pluto in Aquarius is that, especially with that face melting entry that we have and all of this, the stellium of energy that we have, it's about saying there needs to be something more to hold all of this energy, and to also not be afraid to step out of a role, to step on your own, to step into the role of the outsider. And I know in our previous discussion that came up a bit, to be that outsider who kind of has to step away from what everybody else is talking about to bring forth new space and new ideas, and maybe not even new ideas, but integrated ideas. And for me, in my work as a transpersonal guide, when I'm working with people, I get a lot of Aquarian energy. And so what I wind up encountering are people who have maybe not mainstream worldviews or perceptual abilities. You can call me and say, hey, I'm talking to aliens and I kind of want to understand am I going crazy? And I'll say, well, no. What are they saying to you? Where is this in your human experience? And how does this serve your spiritual journey? So it's not necessarily like a new story that we're laying out that they can kind of grasp toward. It's integrating what is happening for them as an individual and how they're being called into spirit or called to a higher vibration. And for me, this February feels really much like an initiation into spiritual power. And I say that with a caveat because back here in our solar system on planet Earth, we have a lot of issues with power. And we also have a lot of issues with truth. Standing in your own power and standing in truth, unshakable truth, it's kind of like a superpower in itself. People can't handle the truth, can't utter the truth to themselves. And so for me, in practicing psychosynthesis, I just invite that person, I guide them to the place where they can be their own agent and let them make their own truth and meaning, because that's where this Aquarian, like, okay, you're the outsider, you're walking away from what you've known and establishing your own authority, and maybe in a way self-isolating to do that, but that's how we're going to break the ice into new space, into new ground with all of this energy coming through. Well, pause. Want to get a few words in? I know.
Yeah, so I love this Aquarian thing of being the asshole in the room. And it's so interesting to me in February, we're as we have all of this Aquarian action going on. We are setting up for eclipses on the Aries Libra axis. And, with Libra on the South Node, we're reviewing a lot of old patterns around groupthink and feeling like everybody has to agree on everything and everything needs to be palatable and palliative. Like, we don't want to ruffle any feathers. We don't want to cause, any offense or pain, which those things are a part of life. And if we do that too much, we're not in any kind of authenticity. And so we have that going on. Aries is on the North Node, and Aries is like almost oblivious to like the group or whatever everyone else is doing, and really just wants to go their own way. And then we bring in all this Aquarian type of energy, of the dissenter, of learning how to speak truth in the environment of everyone kind of doing these little performances that have been just ingrained, right? Just continuing to do the dance without thinking, without trying to even like, let me investigate that. Let me look for the alternative story here. I really want to make up my own mind about these things. And I'm seeing like a polarity already happening, where there are these outsiders, or we call marginalized people or attitudes, starting to get very emboldened. And at the same time, there's what I'm going to call this like Libra thing, or this shadow Aquarius thing going on of I see everyone around me behaving this way or believing this certain thing. So because so many people are doing it, that must be right. And I don't want to, I don't want to upset anybody or upset the status quo. So I'm just going to keep doing this as long as everybody else is. And I see my experience is both of those urges to keep pretending and performing what everyone else is doing without looking too deeply into anything, and also to be the one who's like, I have a different opinion, or I know some different information, and it's gonna upset that whole little organized thing we've had going on, and it's gonna make things really messy. But I have to speak out. I have to go against the grain, swim upstream, however you want to think about it. And I feel that heating up. And also, I'm like bringing in some other things that are going on in relation to all the Aquarian stuff, Pluto and Aquarius, of Leo also. Like, and Leo is the opposite sign of Aquarius. Leo, also a fixed sign, wants to do things Usually, in the way things have always been done, they like to maintain that continuity, that consistency. And Aquarius is like about rupturing that and disrupting. And I think about the same thing, this like this growing polarization of people who are very invested in the Leo way of being, which I think of as America loves its Leos. Like we love our celebrities and our very telegenic leaders, who embody, all this like regal, I don't know, power. And I see again this division of people wanting to hold on to having a strong, confident leader who has this power and who looks really good holding that power, especially in America. They gotta look good. And people who are like, no more leaders, more of an anarchistic, like we need to decentralize. We need to make networks instead of like building these hierarchies. No more leaders, let's take that down. And when I think about Pluto opposing Leo, I think about, and we were talking about generations last week as well. I'm thinking about the baby boomer generation, the Pluto and Leo generation, who spent a lot of energy setting up the hierarchical and investing in having a central control or a central control paradigm, and Pluto coming up and opposing Pluto and Aquarius coming up and opposing all that history and power of Leo and Leo invested people and really trying to break that up. But yeah, those are some thoughts I had while you were, I mean, I had more, but I'm gonna stop there. And could you, since you brought it up, could you tell us a little bit more about your practice? I want to say parapsychology or psychosynthesis, and I'm not sure which one to say.
I'll help.
Okay.
So, I just wanted to say, girl, you started bringing that Leo in, and I was like, get out of my mind because I wanted to bring that in too. So, but we'll start in a lot of order. My practice is based upon psychosynthesis, it is a spiritual psychology, the transpersonal psychology, a spiritual psychology that was created by Roberto Osagioli, who's an Italian physician in the early 1900s. He was very influenced by Eastern ways of thinking. And he said that all we're doing essentially is moving towards wholeness in the human experience. For me, that sure does sound like Ram Dass saying we're all just walking each other home. You can hear the Eastern influence. So, psychosynthesis is at once a practice. It's a process that we're actively going through our mind, the pieces of our mind are synthesizing, integrating with each other. We're continually growing. We work with what we call subpersonalities, your characters, right? And as you grow and integrate, bring awareness to the personalities and your modes of being, bring awareness to the internal experience, maybe see it mirrored in the external. It's all about becoming aware and disidentifying. So ka-ching, there's the Aquarian piece right there. It's bearing witness to what's going on in yourself, saying, I am not these thoughts, I'm not this body. I am just pure consciousness and letting it go. So when I work with someone, What we really do is a practice of conscious relating. And this came up a little bit when we were talking last week, but I might be there holding space for someone, and they could come at me saying, "I just don't feel connected. I'm unhappy with this. I'm unhappy with that." And I'll let them go. I'll let them talk. And I'm being very aware of what's going on in my mind, in my body. And so I might say, I have this thought of, X, Y, and Z. Is this mine, or is that yours? Allowing at each juncture for the person to go deeper into their experience, to go deeper into a stream of consciousness. I often facilitate meditations, and that can look like not necessarily a guided meditation where I'm telling you envision this, envision that. I'm just saying we're going on a journey. And here's what we kind of want to do, but what's coming up in your field, what's coming up for you. So these are transformative spaces, and whether I'm working individual with an individual as a guide, again, they can bring something to a session, or they, might just say, "I just want to kind of show up and just check in with myself," kind of like mental yoga in a way. But then it's also because it's a spiritual psychology, for me, this is the psychology that best reflects our world and the nature of our reality on the quantum level. We're spirit, we're energy. You can tell me we're bunches of vibrating springs and or strings and waves, and we're all energy throughout the universe. Like, it means nothing until I kind of filter it down and say, I feel interconnected and I feel that presence across the globe. I am in awe of this tree that's inspiring to me. So there's that bridge between my experience, the human experience, and this fundamental spiritual nature of our world. So psychosynthesis for me is one step farther than something like Jungian psychology. You can pick up a book, we can read what Jung said about the meanings of dreams and symbols and the collective unconscious. Or you can go one step farther into the domain of psychosynthesis, step into the numinous, open the door, and then I'll say, "Well, what do you make of all these dreams and these symbols and synchronicities happening?" So we're kind of like moving generationally speaking toward that need to create some kind of central knowledge, like you just referred to the boomers and Jung creating that knowledge of psychology, moving on to humanistic psychology and meeting those values of like those ways of being in compassion and feeling connected to each other. But then we go a little bit farther and then we say, okay, well, ultimately we're just spiritual beings having this human experience. And so how do you work with that? Most mainstream psychologies are not based in this spiritual paradigm. They still look at the mind in, those what for me is sort of like this post-industrial capitalistic way. The mind has a part, the mind does a thing. And that's not to completely disregard all of that. That is taking where appropriate what we've learned and integrating it. Is there a wealth of work in mainstream psychology, cognitive behavioral therapy that can be applied and be effective in mitigating trauma or a person's growth? Absolutely. Psychosynthesis is about growth. It's not just about, I feel like shit, I want to deal with it and get back on. Psychosynthesis is that consciousness expansion. And so you're like, whoa, I see some shit. And now I know there's a whole lot more going on. I have been for a long, long, long time interested in parapsychology, which is from the materialist point of view, researching in the language of science, looking for processes, looking for that like linear sort of that Saturn sort of container to create to say this is what happens, these are the laws of nature. But parapsychology deals with the anomalies of nature. We are essentially looking into the fringe areas of the mind. A parapsychologist probably the most famous one y'all could think of is Ghostbusters. When people ask me what's parapsychology, I'm like, Peter Venkman, he's a parapsychologist. In many different forms, they could be looking for data. I always say, you come to me as a person, maybe in crisis, maybe just wanting to feel more deeply into yourself, and you've got your stories. The plural of stories is data. So now we have more than one person saying, hey, I think I'm seeing aliens. Hey, I'm having near-death experiences. Hey, I'm having memories of a past life. Hey, I think I can hear that person on the other side of the world in this like weird, like light language exchange, this elevated consciousness. And I'm like, all right, cool. Way above my pay grade to judge or to tell you what's going on with your human experience. But what does it mean for you? And also, I have over the past several years, I have relied on a lot of data generated by parapsychologists. There is a wonderful facility out in California, the IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences. They do incredible work with remote viewing, extrasensory perception, channeling. It was actually created by Edgar Mitchell, who's an astronaut. When he went to space, he had this out-of-body supernatural experience where he felt indelibly connected to everything beyond Earth, beyond. I mean, he's floating in space and he's out of his body. Jeez, that's got to be like crazier than the craziest drug ever, right? That experience. And then he comes back down and he says, there's more to th than just this material world. There is this spiritual experience to it. And there are many places all over the world doing really great research grounded in science. The Winbridge Institute, I think it's in Arizona, run by Mark Bocuse, and they look into the science behind Reiki and energy work, measuring in the language of science, like, is there an energetic exchange? We can look at like the electromagnetic field of a living organism and see if there's some effect that happens. This is also mind-matter interaction. So there are a whole lot of really big words, but these are all things that we're sort of peeking into. The image that's coming up for me is that painting, I believe it's by a Dutch painter, where he's sort of like peering through the veil in this big bubble. It's a medieval painting. So these are all tiny glimpses of the spiritual nature of our existence that we're just opening up to. Parapsychology is this rigorous discipline, and it's been such a gift to work with Annalisa Ventola, who is the director of the Parapsychological Association. And she has, over the past, I almost been like 10 years, 9, 10 years, she as a woman is her own force of nature, and she has been ushering us toward more collaboration, more interdisciplinary research. So it used to just be, folks in a lab, saying, can you move this with your mind? Reading a Zener card, can you see behind this card, right? To now more collaboration around consciousness and consciousness studies. In the past few years, we have been working more with mental health care professionals because that's where the sort of crossover happens. When we had a, well, we, not we, I attended, I didn't host it, but there was a conference on exceptional experiences and mental health care. So when someone comes to you as a counselor, as a therapist, and they're saying like, look, I think I went out of body last night. It scared the shit out of me. Some counselors might be like, oh, no, you didn't. Or, oh, here's some, here's some medication to dumb that down. Or, well, that, no, that, that and just don't unpack it. But they're not looking in totality at the full nature of our existence, which is a spiritual being having a human experience. So again, big journey, big ideas. Psychosynthesis is what I practice. The master's that I'm doing in England, it is the only graduate level offering in the world in this academic setting. So that's why I've kind of had to like leverage the pandemic and online learning and all the chaos of the Pluto and Capricorn situation created this crucible where There are some things that have worked, some things that haven't, but I've been able to do this graduate work in England while living here in the United States. And I wouldn't have had access to it previously. And then it's sort of my knowledge and my leverage of psychosynthesis then fits in. This is where I start to become the sort of ambassador. You talked about, ooh, it's Mars and Gemini, and you have all your projects going on. I have my, Eros, Sun, Neptune, and Mercury stellium in my seventh house in my natal chart. So this is my whole, like, let's bring all this ethereal stuff into like language, because that's ultimately my work, is languaging new realities and languaging ways, allowing people to language their reality. Because I'm not going to say, you're crazy, that didn't happen, that can't happen. And in that respect, I've been the intellectual outsider for years. And the gift of that is that I've never stayed, I've always listened to that inner voice where I'm just like, I've always been the asshole in the room going like, no, there's more. No, there's more. So now I've got this like sort of feral track record of ideas, and then bringing them back down into root, into reality, to create this container that can actually be really helpful, especially in the field of mental health care, where outsiders, such as people who have neurodivergence, people who have schizophrenia, people who have, even something as common as ADHD can actually cause or be caused by these perceptual differences that, in order to cope, people have these like personalities, these coping mechanisms. And so for me, it's a bit performative to say like Mental Health Awareness Day or ADHD Awareness Day. I'm like, yeah, but what is that person doing with that experience? Like, how are they then living with that experience, which is the way that their body and mind filter reality? Look, if you 6 foot, 7 foot tall, you're going to be a better basketball player than somebody who's 4 foot tall. I mean, it is what it is, right? You have to work into the body that you have and the strengths that you have, the mind that you have. And in all we, and we were taught, right? And we were led by the boomer generation, by, I think, established structure, to want to fit in, that fundamentally something is wrong if you don't fit in. Because the other side of that is having your own damn agency and your own belief in yourself. And then that's when you're the terrifying outsider, where, I've been on this course for a long, long time. I've had my own sort of pursuit of ideas, and I'm 43 now. And people are like, how have you never had a major affiliation? How have you never had a job? How have you, like, I've always been gig working, minus like 9 months. I worked at a scientific publisher in Hoboken, right? And I was always like, nah, that just doesn't fit my lifestyle and my own self-care and my need because of my experience with mental illness and times earlier in my life when I was not well. I needed self-care. No one could tell me, let alone how much I'm worth or what a schedule was like. No one could tell me how to mind my own body and mind. So I was just like the ultimate outsider here, because I knew that that is what was true for me. And in talking about outsiders coming back in, I feel like what we're working with here, with this burst of Aquarian energy, or this burst of energy, let's say, in Aquarius season, for me, this is all inner child work. This is inner, the heroine journey, the hero's journey. And then if you can step into the energies, the archetypes, psychosynthesis too is really, it's a psychology of energetics. So you're stepping into the energies of the mind as you experience it, right? You step into that journey, and then you can work with it to disidentify, and then it no longer has power over you. So going back to when you started to bring in the Leo energy. And you talked about the Libra shadow. I also wanted to say, like, for marginalized people and for people, anyone who is really looking, who really need that comeuppance, give them their damn power. Because what Leo represents for me is that continuum of development. It's Narcissus, right? So as we grow and grow healthy psychologically, we all have those bits of narcissism. We need to, as a baby, kind of like identify with the mom, grab for the boobies, grab for the daddy. And then you get older and you're like, oh, I'm a little kid, I can be feisty. And then you become your own person. An unhealthy process of psychological ungrowth or no growth creates those really hard ego structures that Leo represents, that narcissism that was never kind of exercised. And that stranglehold on power is there. So then it's like, give them this damn experience. Like, I love just having in view the Leo, the ego, as the polarity to the Aquarian energy. Because on the other hand, somebody who kind of like does their own thing can also, like, that's very much an Aquarian energy. But I really feel like it's the power play, that internal power play behind it. Can that person who is so identified with the ego, aka Leo, aka like narcissist, not actually let go? Or can that person who is so identified with the self, not ego, just be the goddamn weirdo, because that's where they are happy and free? And yeah, big energy coming through for that container in Aquarius season now. So it's that inner game stuff. And I would also encourage and invite people to start with, there's not just one hero's journey. There's not one linear hero's journey. There's journeys in, out, and all around. So if that's what resonates with the inner planet work, go there. Get messy. Like, again, we're not having that mono joy ride from like obstacle to success, or like, I don't understand, I understand. I don't know, man, do you. Make sure you put on a pair of pants and then get out of town. Like, go somewhere, go find the thing, go on that journey unplanned.
And maybe even not put on the pair of pants. I don't like I'm thinking of like the pantsless genius archetype, right? Like they're really just connecting to everything that's on the outside of the barrier or the line. They're not even thinking about pants. Wow, there's so much basically. Because I'm listening to you through the lens of Aquarius, and there was so much that you said about psychosynthesis that things like keywords like consciousness and being able to get distance from the ego, get distance from mechanical structure. Lack of attachment, if we're getting into like a character study, that's one thing a lot of Aquarians are often, labeled as they're distant or they're and it's because they're not attached to like some central story. And that's what enables them to, bust the wall down, climb over the wall, and go into a vaster space. So they get that distance. And then what happens, with Aquarius? Then they can see, like, Aquarius also is like, oh, they're objective and blah blah blah, but there's that lack of attachment again. And anyone who's like studied meditation, from the perspective of we are just pure consciousness, and how do we find that state through practice of just being consciousness, very Aquarian. And also what you said that I just loved, also the word anomaly came up, and like again, these experiences that people would describe as anomalies, or just the phenomenon of anomaly in our collective experience. And then you said something, and this is so key for like mental health, perceptual difference. Like again, it's seeing, and this is, I think, what Aquarius tries to do, why it wants to pull out, why it wants the bird's eye view, alien eye view, is it wants to see clearly. And if we're not attached to the central stories and the central constructs, when you pull out and see, you're probably going to see things very differently. And then people who are still very attached to whatever constructs or situations, feelings, stories, they're going to point to this person saying, actually, I was able to get out and this is what I see. And it's like, oh no, that's different. Nope, something's wrong with you. And with Pluto coming in over the next 20 years, it's a slow process. That tide may turn. And but also, you know, when you brought up Jung and some, like, you know, one of the main Jungian attachments to Pluto is this idea of Pluto as shadow. Which I work with. It's like, yeah, like Pluto will bring up all of the underbellies of what happens when we go too far out, disengage too much. Yeah. So, but back to, so after, you know, all of you have listened to that and are starting to make some like connections in your mind, we have some really remarkable Pluto astrology in February. On February 5th, Mercury makes a conjunction to Pluto. So they have a meetup. Mercury moves on. And on February 14th, AKA Valentine's Day, Mars conjoins Pluto.
Spicy,
that'll
sexy.
be. It's either going to be like hot, deep, super intimate, transformative, like sexuality, or you know, Mars and Pluto in general, anytime they come together, we're thinking, you know, typically violence, or force, like extreme force penetration. But again, there's no good or bad. This can go a lot of different ways. I just think it's interesting that that's on, you know, we're talking about constructs on Valentine's Day, which shouldn't be an Aquarius season anyway. If you're gonna have a day celebrating love, can you at least like move it to Pisces season? And then we have Venus Pluto a few days after that on February 17th. So between February 5th and February 17th, these inner planets are really pulling that Pluto in Aquarius energy down to a more tangible place for us. And I don't know, what do you think about February 5th through February 17th with those inner planets meeting up with Pluto?
So I think I'm going to take even further down into the earth, into what we embody as stories. I think it can be a really good time for self exploration around what does partnership mean, and am I equating what's causing me to be attracted to someone? Is it their wealth? Is it their resources, their value that they can bring to me? Because for me, when you start, like, I wouldn't say I've never had like the two line up, but you can have fiery, explosive, passionate sex. We can have like the relatable dude who shows up. The kind, you know, like that kind of like wild, fantasy fulfilling type of love and rock and roll relationship, which also kind of has that like Plutonian impulse, because that Pluto complex of what we need to unpack and be with so that we can reclaim our power is first going to propel us off out into the wild to act out and to be out of control. That exactly what we are trying to attract and heal is first going to sort of act in this like concave manner where it's not going to let us be with it. It's like, you know, you want to have a healthy and loving relationship, except if you've been in relationships where you've gotten roughed up and you haven't been held emotionally and you haven't felt that sensitive touch and connection. Well, like you're going to continue to gravitate and feel that false sense of fulfillment in these relationships that aren't giving you what you need until you do the actual work, disidentify with that embedded, embodied narrative that this is what, you know, I can settle for. And I think that our notion of not just partnership and value, but what does it mean to have a long-term love? Where does that chemistry maintain, and where is it different from just staying in relationship with someone because they fulfill our material resources? And you know, like, hi, never had partnership wealth, never had generational wealth. So like what I got, I'm Lone Ranger for real, you know? So I'm very sensitive to the way that over time my own journey has gone, but also hearing over time, and I've been doing this work and consulting with people for almost 20 years now in, you know, unofficial capacities. People will just show up and say, this is what's going on, and this, I can someone just hear me and see me? And I'm always like, okay, you know. But I see now over time, and especially entering the 40s, where relationships are rupturing and people cannot stand on their own without their partner's resources. And so, in wanting to keep a passionate, long-term, fiery relationship happening in this holiday around love, I say, well, what exactly is that love? Where are you autonomous in that love? And then, how, once that energy is pulling through, how is that sexual energy, which is just like the creative energy, they're all different generative forms of energy. Like, where are you blowing out your own structures? And I think that we can also not necessarily, I don't want to dub, you know, Valentine's Day weekend as like the weekend to watch out for spiritual emergence, but also watch out for this really strong energy pulling through. Mars is almost like, you know, Pluto's making, issuing the assignments. Mars is showing up on Earth because Mars is that, you know, like that ego making for me, that will of choosing whatever you've got going on, choosing the story, or being unaware and inadvertently continuing to choose old stories, right? Pluto is that volcanic force going, ah, but I want to work this shit out. You work it out in the sheets, you work it out on the tax brackets, you work it out however. But where is this contact, this exchange of energy pulling through so that I can elevate my experience? And for me, let that me also means letting go of this patriarchal notion that man and woman make a relationship, that material resource and marriage is coupled with relationship, that any material resource is coupled with an amorous, love-based relationship. And however that comes through for an individual or individuals, whatever you're loving, however you're loving, you know, it's just, it's a really interesting exchange of love, value, And ultimately, if we get even deeper, the masculine feminine, you know, like you can really work to recalibrate that masculine feminine energy, and having that look like love, but then also having that look like material resource based on love and based on what you want to attract in this holiday celebrating couples. Like, come on now, you know, the energy and the to build what you need. Be the asshole in the relationship, you know.
No, absolutely. With Pluto, inner planets contacting Pluto, you have the opportunity again to find the distance to be able to see the structure. It's like, oh, is this what is actually going on? You can see more deeply. Some hard truths might be exposed for you to engage with or not. And you know, one thing I think people don't think about when they think about Pluto is also incredibly healing because of its ability to penetrate all the band-aids and superficial things that get in the way of real deep down, like true healing, like right at the roots. And so that like couple of weeks as the inner planets are doing that, some things might be introduced to you, some opportunities. And then as the planets, you know, come around and do their cycle, when we have like Mercury, Mars, and Venus coming to oppose Pluto, during that stretch of time, if you decide to go on that journey, you could do some really deep, good work. And I was also, while you were talking and thinking about relationships, because yeah, we have a Venus and Pluto conjunction and then the Mars Pluto on Valentine's Day. And the Leo Aquarius opposition when it comes to these like pageants, like Valentine's Day. Leo loves pageants, right? They love their performances of these types of rituals and things. I'm thinking a lot about, we talked a little bit about boomers and Leo. I'm thinking about this younger generation who they're developing relationships that seem really a lot more Aquarian to me, like the aromantic movement, where a lot of younger people, like under 30, as I'm talking to them, they don't want to have heteronormative, monogamous, one-on-one relationships anymore. They're thinking in terms of, I want to commit myself, I want to have a committed, loving relationship with my chosen family and have that be the priority, like very Aquarian. And then if I have lovers, you know, that's an important relationship too, but it's secondary to committing myself to being a part of a more decentralized, egalitarian way of being with other people, and that's going to be the priority. And that's really interesting. I'm seeing a lot of people, especially younger people, move into that, and actually older people, like people who are in like retirement age, actually some boomers. And I think some of it has to do with our just wretched, you know, economic state and lack of support. Like people are like making their own senior communities. They're getting a group of friends together and saying, well, we're going to be a family and we're going to share resources and we're going to live, you know, as our own family. And this is the most important supportive relationship we can have, instead of worrying about, you know, if someone has like lost their spouse at that age, like when am I gonna fall in love again, or when am I gonna meet my person? This whole idea, very Leo, of I'm gonna meet my person.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that, because that's definitely, again, part of my own journey, where over the years, when If someone was like, oh, don't you want to have kids? Don't you want to have a family? And I'd be like, nah, fuck off. I got adventures to have. But now I can definitely say, look, I tangled five fellas last year. They all walked for different reasons. A couple of them were just like, you're too out of control. You're too ambitious. And, just things just didn't work out. But all I heard from that was, I am not that perfect reflection of a woman that you expected. So I'm feeling validated by what you're saying now. And it's the same thing where I had to be like, well, what is it that I am looking for in a relationship, or what can I expect at all? I am, hetero, I'm into dudes, I'm into monogamy. And even then I had someone clap back at me saying, well, monogamy is so overrated. For me, this is true. For you, that may not be true. So then what can I expect? And so again, like, there's that reflection of the inner work that I have taken, authority over, wanting to create, and but also knowing that when I put it out there, and I also feel like I'm saying this because I think, after having spoken with so many people over the years, it's kind of like we can pump each other up and say, do your own thing, find your agency. But then you also have to look at the ecosystem and the community that you are in and surrounds you. And so this is very Gen X, like, this is me giving you permission to bounce. Maybe some of those boomers, they need to share what they're doing, their freedom. The young ones, the millennials and the folks who are younger than us, like, I love them too because they are breaking that mirror, right? Narcissus only works if he's got echo to mirror back to him, to have that pure reflection of just what he wants to see. Cool. They're doing that work and finding their own, creating their own circuits and communities. And I feel like we're also part of that bridge generation who's in between, needing to hear this, but also needing what kind of old world or old school, kind of new school, depending on the level of awareness and that we bring to our own journey. So if you are doing this work and looking not just to, again, it's not just about dealing with life. Self-care is really about thriving in life. And so maybe you're listening to this podcast and you're looking into astrology because you're just wanting that X factor. You want to kind of level up. And I also give you permission to walk away from that which no longer serves you. And I know family and resources. Oof, like I've spoken to many people in relationships who are like, I can't walk away because I can't pay my bills. But like, yeah, you can walk away and see what happens, So about finding and connecting to and listening that inner voice, that Mars, Venus, Mercury situation, the way the energies are working through you, but also trusting in your own power. And that's where you come back out to ultimately the impetus behind Pluto's contacts. You're gonna have to trust, man. If you want to call it surrender, if you want to call it balls to the wall, like, okay, I'm just seeing what's happening here, which is definitely how I've been living my life, like, you just surrender and in this great task, if I want to change and evolve and grow in big ways, surrender. And if it's smaller ways where you're just kind of like refining and fine-tuning your experience, maybe not making, such big changes, also bearing in mind that you are a beacon for community. Like sometimes, like, for me, I did a lot of traveling when I was younger. And for me, the gift of all of that traveling was just seeing that someone else was doing something different and that they accepted me as I was. Some communities are just like by nature of how they're made. You're not like us, you're out. You're not part of it. So just showing that solidarity and that openness, which goes back to the beginning of this conversation, about having that bird's eye view and being able to Not just to witness that bird's eye view, but to also, I'd say, hold it for each other. And this is coming up for me, so I'm just gonna, go with it. Something that my mentor, Dr. Schaub in New York City, once told me, and it really struck with me, or it stuck with me, thinking that the ancient ruler of Aquarius is Saturn. I think this is where it's coming from. He told me that all anxiety is a form of death anxiety. All anxiety is a form of death anxiety. Something's going to end. Something's going to be different in this linear time. And in being a mentor, and he's a psychosynthesis psychotherapist in the city, and he's been there maybe 30 years, 40 years. He did counseling through the AIDS epidemic. He stopped teaching to work specifically with the folks going through the AIDS epidemic. So he's been around, And he's like, all people really want is that feeling of interconnectedness. So when they are the outsider and they step out of community, or they just step out of anywhere where they previously had belonging, it feels like you're gonna die. Or you don't make a choice and you don't fulfill some of these plans because there's so much anxiety around the what ifs. In a way, all anxiety is death anxiety. So in true Aquarian across the ages fashion, I want to invite that idea that you are spirit underneath all of that. Might feel like you're dying, and in some ways maybe it's a bit of ego death, and maybe some of these personalities or these outdated structures or the feeling of death that you embody because you have a body and you have a limited time. There's anxiety around that, but there is underneath all of that fundamental interconnectedness because we are spirit. It's a very Aquarian idea, right? Like I can be part of life, but I also know that at any time, might not be. But so that I might live a little bit more fully, recognizing that the anxiety is anxiety talking, and it's coming from that space from which I want to feel deep interconnectedness.
Oh, I love that. That was a perfect way to end that thought because the truth of what is, like what is that things are that way. We don't have to get interconnected. We don't have to make the connections. They are that way. And any time we experience something different, that is an illusion. That is a human-made structure, like creating this feeling or sense of separation. But the natural state is that this is just what it is. We are that way, and our minds are interconnected. Last time we talked, I think the phrase interconnected mind came up, and the media, which I think we're on a 20-year journey of technological advancement and our evolving relationship with other people through technology and media and how we're relating to it. And a lot of these things are, I mean, they're already coming up. I think like as soon as like we're recording this in early January, as soon as next month in February, I have a feeling it's going to be a bit of a rocket ship. Like the developments are going to come quick and fast, and it's going to be wild. And there's a lot of shadow in that's going to come up with advances in technology and the like technology in and of itself. It's just technology. It's inert. It's this neutral thing. It's like what happens when we humans get our hands on it and try to be with each other in this way. Like what? the enhancements to that interconnected mind and also the manipulations of that interconnected mind also, I think, are going to increase. It's going to be something. Oh yeah.
Want a tangential story for that?
Sure.
Okay. So, I have, you know, I live in Alabama, which is predominantly a Protestant Baptist country, right? I know it's a state, but like Baptist country, proverbially speaking. And I have a black truck with the license plate that says UFO girl on it. And I did that because Space Girl was taken. I don't know. It's like an open calling card, right? And like I have people talk to me. They just come up to me every day and like, look, between angelic encounters and people just wanting to be seen because they were talking to their dead grandmother in their trailer the other day, like people just come up to me and it's kind of awesome. Very different than what I would have thought my experience would be. But the thing about living in the South, in the deep South, and this is going on media narratives, and like, look, Northerner born and raised, right? And I live here, and there was a little bit of a culture shock. But what started to unfold for me once I moved here, and I spent some time in New Orleans, which is its own planet, but it's also the South. Something started to emerge for me around the media narratives of the South and mutual care and this position that I think the Northeast has of the Southern states. And I think this speaks to some like really uncomfortable, those shadow-like rumblings of Civil War, Trump, you know where I'm going with this. Although Trump was a New Yorker, right? He's got a stronghold in the South. And I think I had a couple years ago this sort of like idea that educated people wouldn't vote for him. Well, look, that was my own belief. Anyway, so I'm in the South and there is it's definitely also Trump country. And I ask myself, why? Because of my license plate. People come up to me and share their stories, but they also share their conspiracy theories around Trump, UFO disclosure, and the upcoming civil war. And it's like, look, it's not about a North-South thing, it's about a resource thing. So this weekend, I do these things where I just like, you know, turn off all my screens. I have a navigation system in my truck. I just kind of go, but no cell phones, no nothing. I just kind of go and I drive. And I was out somewhere deep in the country, Confederate flags flying left and right. And I go to get gas at this gas station. This older fella standing behind me in his super busted up rusty Ford truck or whatever it was, right? And then he looks at me, he goes, "Hey girl, hey, you look into the skies too?" And I said, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, UFO girl." So it turns out this fella was very much a Trumper, very much a believer in the upcoming imminent civil war. But he said that this war in the Middle East was a media narrative. And he said, "Girl, I'm a prepper. I got all these people across the country. We all talking on our YouTube channel. They're prepper and preparing because they think that the aliens are," he said, "UFOs are coming and taking the resources off their ships in the Middle East." So here I am with my, if it's true for you, and so I just said, "All right, then what else?" He goes, "Look, I mean, yeah, we got the Bible, but you better believe that there are life forms beyond our planet." I said, "Okay, say more." And so here I am on this very long journey with material resources on Earth. Now talking about the aliens in the Bible and the media narratives, and he has this entire network of preppers, apparently, and there are quite a few preppers in the South preparing not so much for the fall of the government, but for the lack of resources and food. So I'm like, Okay. I know who you're voting for. I know what your thoughts are. I also know you are so attached to this media narrative. At a certain point, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. But what I have not realized, or I had not realized until my time in the South, is just how much a lot of these conspiracy theories are related to aliens, are related to resources, and are related to, I mean, if we really step in and do the work, coming together as a human race and coming together as a planet. Now, I think most people don't even think about this over coffee in the morning. I think about it all the time because I'm now surrounded by people for whom this is a reality. This media war is reality. So I think it's such an interesting way to, again, keep this above and beyond just, you know, astrological self-care considerations. Where in society and where are we in a global media narrative? So sure, we have media narratives through mainstream channels, and yes, we've got this awful situation. No one should die. No one should be killed. No one should be deciding when someone else gets killed or what their value is, their life is worth, right? But then on a very organic level, this media is sort of like acting like this network, almost like the anti-network interconnectedness, connecting all these people with these ideas that are good for them, that work for them, that they are outsiders within this country, but they're also like preparing to not be reliant on government. Like that just blows my mind. And how then, where I'm going with this is then how then can I see the humanity in the person so that I don't perpetuate the shadow? And this all just happened because I was getting gas, right? And but it often it's like the call, hey, you want to talk UFOs? Yes, but it's like this gonzo narrative that just takes you like I'm like, wow. And that said, that being said, Trump doesn't even matter. His power, his narcissism, his shininess doesn't even matter because he fulfills a role in their story. It's a no-brainer because they're worried about the aliens and the resources, which is like the shadow of media. Now let me take a step back and a sip of my coffee because that was tangential, but yeah.
It's tangential, but illustrative. Like that is an example of the way media is kind of helping, even though it's all networked, but it's actually helping to create and promote about 5,000 different realities. It's not just, do you believe this or do, it's not that binary. It's so fucking fragmented that if you step outside your bubble, like you could, if you really had a conversation with a person who is not in your milieu and said, I really want to know how you see things. You will hear something, even from someone who seems like quote unquote normal, that might make you go, huh? Like, because it happens to me, even with people in my bubble. If I go deep enough with them at this point in time, more than at any other point in time in my life, I'll be like, okay, yeah, I can see that. And then we'll hit a point if we go deep enough where I'm like, wait, what? Or they do that to me. And I think media is really helping that along because we're in a time of like such massive change. Things are very chaotic, but then you have this technology that people can manipulate and use in all kinds of ways to create a reality that makes sense to them. And then they can find other people just in that narrow hallway of information who will agree with them. And then you got a little community of people who are going to support a certain vision of reality. And that actually is fragmenting us. This, again, it's all how we're using these tools. But that was a great story because it was like it illustrates that. But I got it. Oh. Were you gonna
And
say?
it, yeah, I just wanted to tie it in to rather than letting that just be the way it is. Like, I'm not, walking out, like, I'm, like, well, that guy is full of shit. Or, like, oh, maybe I'll go join his prepper, right? Like, the point here for me, the takeaway I think of this whole discussion is then, can I just be with that? I am not attached to any story in my own experience that says I need to tell him what's up or I need to ignore him. Like, okay, it is what it is because at the end of the day, you on the side of the road bleeding out or you getting something happening to you, like, I will be there for you because you are a human, because it's just that story that divides us, illusory, right?
Yeah, and that is Aquarian. It's especially right now, everyone believes a lot of different things, and some people very passionately, some people very destructively. But here Aquarian can pull out and say, okay, but we're all humans. And Aquarius can maybe more than any other sign, tend to and care for anyone who is part of the human family, because it seems ironic, but it's because they're detached that they can care actually for more people.
Yeah, and it's knowing when to turn it on and turn it off, right? It's that sort of bifocal vision, like here I am attached, or I can feel myself being attached. I witness that. Here I need to detach so that I can do what I need to do, which is part of that higher ideal that we are human, and I need
Yeah.
to put my turn on or turn it off, bifocal vision.
Wonderful. And so I gotta mention the two lunations that we have coming up in Aquarius season. January 25th, we have a full moon in Leo, opposite Pluto and square Jupiter. So we have a little T square for those of you who study astrology. That's a fixed T square, and that brings into the symbolism, the conversation, all of the things we were talking about, like the Narcissus and Leo and Aquarius. And now we're also bringing in Jupiter and Taurus, which brings in things like the Earth, resources, and also Jupiter will turn up the volume, I think. I think February is going to be quite loud with this Aquarius Leo dichotomy, and so I'm glad we had a lot of different, a variety of conversations about, the way those two things can express. And then on February 9th, we have a new moon in Aquarius square Uranus. And so Uranus is the modern ruler of Aquarius. And those of you who follow astrology, you're probably familiar with some of the things that Uranus likes to do. It's when I'm teaching astrology, I bring in all the break words, break ups, breakthroughs, breakdowns, breaking with tradition, breaking open. It's again, we're unyoking ourselves from something so that get that detachment. So something new can come in. Uranus is often called the Great Awakener, has a Promethean sensibility. It's been called the Sky God. It needs to break with something so it can see bigger, it can experience something bigger and detach. So I think, end of January into February, all of these things are, this isn't subtle astrology. So, yeah, if you're paying attention to what's going on around you through some of these lenses, I think you're going to find a lot of interesting things and maybe even be able to expand your own vision and experience of what's going on in your life, what's going on in the world. And you're going to be more sensitive to these places, any place that's been sticking or stuck or that you felt a little hemmed in. Here's the opportunity where something else can enter. And it's exciting. It's exciting astrology. And there is so much more that can be said, but I think we're coming to a close now. And also I want to thank you, Anastasia, because I work a lot with disability arts, and we include neurodivergence in that. And bringing back Aquarius, the way you're talking about the work you do, it's just so humane to respect a human being and their unique experience, even if it is. Especially if it is not in line with the consensus. I think it's healthy. I think it's humane. And if I think it also, things like neurodivergence, people having different perception. I think most people, if they would let go of needing to train themselves to perceive in a very specific way so they don't become ostracized from society, would find out. I think we would all be labeled neurodivergent if we allowed ourselves to, if we weren't afraid to perceive and process in our own unique ways without that fear of being the outsider. So like the work you're doing is just, I think it's so important because it is humane.
I want to just, I guess, end, but respond to that in kind, because I think it's such delicate work to, not just be held by someone, but also to be encouraged to go beyond and go forth. So you can, we can have people who are differently abled or have different perceptual abilities, and we can say, okay, cool, you're cool with us, but what can you like, how can I encourage you to grow into that space, and how can I encourage you to continue to grow? Because I think one of the things that's always bothered me is that there is a sort of profile for people who are into astrology and even some of the spiritual or healing arts. And look, like correlation is not causation. These transits are not happening and causing shit to go haywire, right? But also, there is, if you read the patterns, there is something to be said for the patterns, for activating the different energies in your mind. And again, if you might be more in tune with certain energies than others. And I also want to tone it down also, because yes, with that upcoming Uranian tinge infused new moon, breakdowns don't have to break anything if you've done the work. Like you can hold the energy. Breakthroughs sound great on paper, and sometimes the pulse of like, I just want this, right? But like, look, you blow a couple fuses. Staying grounded in this Uranian, this electrical network in our bodies, which can often be overacted or triggered in people with different perceptual abilities, right? Like when I hear Uranus, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta ground, I gotta get in the dirt, I gotta, like just ground, because that's what works for me. And so like this breakthrough energy is cool, but I also know how it affects me. And so just being mindful of not even buying into the hype that we put into the language, always asking, how is this for me? And so, yes, doing the work in the sort of collective of energies and all of the patterns, it's going to be intense, but do you, and you'll get through. And then you'll be like, oh, I could handle that. Don't be afraid of change or surrender. You can handle this when you do the inner work. And astrology is like an excellent, an excellent tool for that. I just wanted to say that to speak to folks who are just like, we I do it too. Like, look, anytime Venus and Pluto come together, anytime Uranus is in the picture, I'm like, But okay. Once I get through that and I ground, then I can work with the energy. It's just
Yeah.
energy.
It's a good point. Yeah, all energy is neutral until it's directed somewhere. And yeah, I feel you on no, there's a lot of different ways to practice astrology, a lot of different schools of astrology, but one thing that really just gets under my skin is what I call like the ambulance chasing astrology, where it's like, okay, we got this Pluto transit coming up, and like there's always a big transit, there's always change, like it's just always happening. But yeah, like let's say like, yeah, this Uranian new moon, for some people it's like going to be like, oh no, and other people are going to be expecting like, yeehaw, like yeah, this is going to be wild and crazy. And all it is it's a break in the pattern. And how you deal with that.
How do you work with that glitch in the matrix? Yeah, you can do it with your conscious will and choice.
So, oh my God, Anastasia, I could talk to you all day. But
Got other space and people to kind of work with, so
but we will be talking again. I enjoyed this so much. Thank you.
ew.
And all of Anastasia's information, how you can get in touch with her if you'd like to speak with her, read her work, all those links will be in the show notes that you're going to send to me. Yeah, email me if there are things that I don't have in your bio, extra links. Yeah, just send them to me. And I think that'll be it for our Aquarius season talk. And take care, everybody. And I will see you next time.
Big love.
Speaking of technology, okay, everybody, have a good one and see you later.